to see you all in person. I think last time I lectured, maybe it was during COVID time. I can't remember. Anyway, really nice to see you. Before I begin my lecture, I want to give big thank yous to Bruce Johnson, who goes here, for just being the sounding board and idea throwing and just kind of exchanging, and for his time, and also resources from R. Kent Hughes, Timothy Keller, and Blackaby. All right. So, understatement, Gospel of Mark is exciting, right? From the get-go, it's like, go. So just to kind of recap a little bit, a few things that we've already talked about, and we're only at chapter 5, right? We've talked about Jesus' baptism by John in the Jordan River, the temptation of Jesus in the wilderness, the beginning of his preaching ministry, and his healing ministry, which began with casting out of the impure spirit. And then there was healings of the paralytic and leper and others. And then our most recent lecture from Linda, which concluded with the calming of the night storm. So just to kind of put us in the frame of mind of where the disciples were before our passage started, Jesus and the disciples just landed their boat onto the shores of Gerasa. And Gerasa was one of the 10 cities of the Decapolis. And this region that they just landed in was on the other side of the Sea of Galilee. And it was away from the strictly Jewish area. And more importantly, to keep in mind that it was not a favorable place by Jewish standards because there was mixing, commingling going on there. So just remember, it was Jesus who asked to go across. And he asked to go to Gerasa because that's just the kind of God he is. He's not turned off or threatened by the unsavoriness in us. He actually moves towards us. So before landing on the shores of Gerasa, Jesus and his disciples had survived a terrible night storm in the Sea of Galilee. They were tossed about so much, the activity that the disciples were fearful that they were actually going to be dying in the storm. Meanwhile, Jesus was sleeping on the same boat. And the disciples wondered out loud if Jesus even cared about them. When the disciples awoke him, he got up and he said to the wind and the sea, "Peace, be still." And like an obedient child, the storm obeyed. The wind ceased and there was great calm. But Jesus asked the disciples why they were so afraid and why they still had no faith. Fair question. They had been with Jesus and had seen all the miracles that he had performed so far. They had front seats to all of Jesus's ministry to date. So it's not like they didn't know, you know, what he had been doing. How come they were still doubting his power? But this was the first time the disciples had seen Jesus command nature. They were scared for their lives in the storm, but they were even more terrified after the storm. Because it's incredible, isn't it? Jesus commands the winds and the sea to quiet down, and they become calm. The thing is, the disciples couldn't define Jesus anymore. He was powerful beyond their description and imagination. They were on their way to forming their understanding of what a well-known teacher, Elizabeth Elliot, had come to understand. And she had said, "God is God, and since he is God, he's worthy of my worship and my service. I will rest nowhere else but in his will. And this will is necessarily infinitely, immeasurably, unspeakably beyond my largest notion of what he's up to." So this is where our passage begins. Jesus and his disciples land in Gerasa, and as soon as Jesus steps out of the boat, a naked, dirty, crazed man runs at him. So this man was possessed by an evil spirit. To be honest, it's not very often that I think about evil spirits, demonic activity, their existence or influence. C.S. Lewis writes this in the preface of his famous Screwtape Letters. "There are two equal and opposite errors into which our race can fall about the devils. One is to disbelieve in their existence. The other is to believe and to feel an excessive and unhealthy interest in them. They themselves are equally pleased by both errors and hail a materialist and magician with the same delight. In essence, whether we refuse to believe of his existence or if we are utterly obsessed with him, Satan considers mission accomplished in both cases, since both extremes distract us from Jesus. We need to be aware and alert of the demonic realm that's around us. But what's really important is to remember that it has no power over us. Jesus came to destroy devil's work. For those who have put their faith in Jesus, evil spirits cannot possess us. We belong to Jesus. The demonic realm may cause us mental anguish and physical torment, but Jesus is able to deliver us from them. Know that he's more powerful than anything and anyone. And for those of us who are considering Jesus, or, you know, are questioning their faith in Christ, I want to say this with great sensitivity and care, because I know that you might be really hurting where you are. Consider this an invitation to consider the fact that Jesus can release you from the bondage that you might be suffering from or anything that's hurting you. So back to the demon-possessed man. He's running at Jesus. The thing is, he was being kept away from the city. He had been put away at the city dump. And he was just walking around aimlessly among the tombs. His friends and family had tried to bind him with shackles and chains, but he had broken through those. No one was able to tame him. Always, night and day, he'd cry out, groaning, cutting himself with stones, wishing the evil spirit would bleed out of him. The evil spirit in this man was torturing him. He was alone, with no one who loved him and with no one to love. He was wasting away in every way, with no one to take him out of this torment. He was in great anguish. Think back to the last lecture about the night storm. In many ways, a storm in nature is a lot like storms in our minds. When our mind is not calm, maybe when we're stressed out or have a lot of things on our mind, it's just like being in a storm. It's difficult to see anything clearly. We are easily afraid. We are not sure of ourselves or others. We cannot trust ourselves or others. And just like in a physical storm, in a mental storm, there's chaos, debris, unpredictable, fast and powerful movements, loud noises, bright lights, great darkness, broken thoughts, unrest. When Jesus sees the tortured man, without being asked, he commands the evil spirit to come out of the man. The evil spirit begs Jesus not to torment him and calls him Son of the Most High God. The evil spirit begs Jesus not to send him into the void, since they prefer to inhabit a living being, preferably a human. Jesus asks him his name. He says, "My name is Legion. We are many." A Roman legion was composed of 6,000 foot soldiers and 120 horsemen and other personnel. So when you hear the word legion, picture great numbers, efficient organization, unrelenting strength. How horrifying to have this single man possessed by such multitude of evil spirits. They beg Jesus to release them to enter the nearby herding pigs, and Jesus permits them to do so. This passage echoes portions of Mark 1. When Jesus had encountered a man possessed by an impure spirit, he'd been teaching at the synagogue in Capernaum. When a man with an impure spirit had seen Jesus, he had cried out, "Listen to the echoes. What do you want with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." "Be quiet," said Jesus sternly. "Come out of him." Just like in that passage, notice how in this passage also the evil spirit pleaded with Jesus. He asked him what he wanted with them and acknowledged that Jesus is the Son of the Most High God. In both passages, we see that the evil spirits recognize who Jesus is, and they are terrified of what he can do to them. Jesus confronts them head on, banishes them from his presence and from the lives of those who are being tortured by him, by them. In our passage today, when the legion leaves the demon-possessed man, the man is finally released from the bondage of the evil spirits. Those evil spirits enter the 2,000 pigs that were herding nearby. The pigs just don't know what to do but to run off the cliff, jump off the cliff, and drown. The pig herders, utterly shocked, run back to the city and tell everyone of what had just happened. The people in the community come to see what had happened to the demon-possessed man. And they see the man sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind. He was truly a picture of good mental health, smiling at the right times, alert, laughing, and even worshiping. When Jesus had met the demon-possessed man, he had been living among the dead, cutting himself, making incoherent sounds, and naked. When Jesus delivered this man from the evil spirits, and this was because of his great compassion for this man, Jesus calmed the storm in his mind. The healed man was now sane. His mind resembled that calm sea. Now he was calm, dressed, focused, and spoke rationally. When the villagers saw the healed man, they were afraid. And as they gathered more details from those who had seen the whole event and heard about what had happened to the pigs, they begged Jesus to leave from their region. Why did the villagers ask Jesus to leave? The drowning of about 2,000 pigs was equivalent to the likes of about $2 million. Big investment. It's like it's being thrown into the Sea of Galilee, lost. The pigs were a source of income and provided economic stability for this community. In order for the villagers to prosper, to provide for their families, the pigs were important. How can they ever have the funds to replace the 2,000 drowned pigs? This is why the villagers told Jesus to go away. They were afraid that Jesus would make them lose more money, that they'd lose more things that are of value to them. Having Jesus around was getting too expensive, too costly. And all this loss for the deliverance of just one demon-possessed man? What they weren't saying out loud was, Jesus, put the demons back into that man and give us back our pigs. That one man's delivery from demons is not worth our loss of this much money and this pigs. It's just one man. No, thank you. No more healing is needed here. Please go far away from here and don't come back. For the villagers, they also wanted to define Jesus in a certain way. You can do this, but don't do that. You can heal, but it can't cost us this much. Well, Jesus obliged their request. As he got back into the boat to leave, the man who had just been healed begged if he could stay with him. But Jesus did not permit him. Instead, Jesus told the man to go back home to his friends and to tell them of the great things the Lord had done for him, of how he had compassion on him. The man obeyed and began to tell in the Decapolis of all that Jesus had done for him, and everyone who heard marveled. You know, Jesus had performed several healings so far, but he had asked people to not say anything. But in this case, he tells the healed man to go tell his friends of what God had done. With Gerasa being a place where there's a mix of Jews and Gentiles, there's a good possibility that our healed friend is a Gentile. Here begins Jesus' declaration that he came for everyone, not just for Israel. Forgiveness of sins is available to all who put their faith in Jesus, not just to a select few. The relief that comes from the release of evil spirits and the bondages can now be experienced by everyone. This is an inclusive message, and this message must have been revolutionary. And that's likely why the healed man wanted to stay with Jesus. Jesus broke all the rules for him. Jesus was beyond his imagination. He had experienced Jesus' generous love and compassion for him. The previously demon-possessed man, who had been ostracized by his community, was now being invited to share his deliverance story with his friends. What must it have meant for this man to be able to go back to his village, to have people love him, and for him to have people to love? He was being fully restored in his mind, in his body, and in his humanity. For us today, some of us may be in the throes of our chaotic minds. Some of us may be like the villagers who don't want any more intrusion or involvement with Jesus that'll affect our lifestyle. And hopefully, some of us may be like the healed man who want nothing but to be with Jesus. No matter where you're finding yourselves today, our Jesus will break all the borders and boundaries to come to us, to calm our storms. And he'll do so with such creativity. He will speak and deal with each one of us in exactly the way that we need, because he sees each of us exactly as we are. And he ministers to us in very, very specific ways. Every interaction is original and unique. One last thing before I close. How blessed we are to know and to learn about our Jesus. We know of all types of evils that our Savior has delivered us from. It may include our miserable past, persistent sins, our hatreds, our prejudices, and he promises to continue delivering us. So now, this freedom that we have received is not just for us to feel good about ourselves. It's meant to be shared. Just like Jesus had told the healed man, we too are to share with our friends who Jesus is, of the great things that he has done for us, of the boundaries that he has broken to come near to us, and how he has had great compassion on us. May God give us all the courage and an overwhelming sense of his love and compassion for us, that the sharing of our stories of who Jesus is to us would be a joy. Thank you so much for listening.